From the home of the codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast. Welcome to the September edition of the Bletchley Park podcast. This month we take you to the new Enigma event where mind-blowing new technology was showcased. We meet the veterans at the wonderful annual Enigma reunion, which is timed each year to tie in with the anniversary of the early call to arms with the coded message, Auntie Flo is not so well. We also test the new multimedia guides on visitors aged from 6 to 86, and we have a nosy listen in on some very special family memories. The new Enigma event was a chance to find out if you have what it takes to be a codebreaker, with experts from GCHQ and some truly amazing new technology, which podcast producer Mark Cotton had to work to get his head around.
This is a modern example of communications research from GCHQ supporting the new cybersecurity needs of the country and involves a demonstration of communication with visible light.
So what we have here is a demonstration of visible light communications, which is a new technology coming out. What I have here are three domestic lamps, which are not quite what they seem. Each one is actually an LED lamp with white light. If I hold my hand under this one, you can see that it looks like normal light, but actually there's a code in each of these three bulbs, a different code in each case, and the code is actually being used to make the light flicker. So you have a different flickering on each light. I have here a tablet running an app. There's a light sensor that's plugged into it. When I present the tablet under the first light, it triggers a video on the tablet, which in this case is an RNIB video. If I look at the middle lamp, we get a video about shopping that's triggered on the tablet. And the far end, we have a video about the space station. So what we're demonstrating here is it's possible to communicate wirelessly with light using a domestic lighting system. Part of my research work is to look at these sorts of technologies. And from a cybersecurity point of view, what we're doing is looking at how we could affect the design of wireless communication systems by looking at different physical media. So in this case, we have visible light. If you think about the way your Wi-Fi router works, it has a radio in it. And that has poor security because the signal can overspill into a neighbour's house or further. So you have to have lots of encryption and authentication on it to make it safe to use. With another medium, like visible light, the light is supposedly confined to a particular spot. So as this technology is developed, which there's research in the UK into making this a networking technology, it will become potentially more ubiquitous. And another tool, perhaps, in making wireless networks secure. So my research work is looking at how the security of a network based on visible light could be affected by the physical properties of the light itself. So is it really just confined to where the light is confined, or does it overspill the same as a radio-based system?
How does that work?
Is that a question or
no? Just tell me one thing. It's the three different outputs on the light.
The code word is a serial modulation of the bulb.
Oh, right, that makes sense.
With a pattern.
But because of the speed of it, you wouldn't see it.
That's right. So,
right, okay,
so
that makes sense.
So the flickering of the bulb.
I think I was just so.
What are you sorry? Am I looking at the
bulb?
It's a proper smoke and mirror, isn't it?
It's the mirror, it's not smoke.
Yeah.
Coming up in November, we have a prestigious new event, Codebreakers Legacy. A team of top speakers will examine the work of the Codebreakers, including John Tiltman and Alan Turing, and how they influence the world we live in today. Tickets are on sale now in the Bletchley Park online shop. Rich storytelling is the key to enjoying a visit to Bletchley Park. Now included in the admission price, as well as a guided tour by a passionate historian, every visitor can take an iPod Touch-based multimedia guided tour of the huts and blocks where the Government Code and Cipher School broke the enemy's seemingly impossible encryption systems.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. For those who don't know me, I'm Ian Standard. I'm the Chief Executive of Bletchley Park. And thank you for coming this morning to this launch of our new multimedia guides. We have two versions, an adult version, designed, as it said, at the adult market, and one that's currently termed Kids. Name might change, but it's currently designed for a wider family audience. And cleverly, the two are designed so that as you go around the park together, they cover the same sort of terrain, so mum, dad and family can all work around the site together in harmony. As you can see, it's based on an iPod Touch. And when we looked at this process of upgrading what were very old and tired audio guides, we felt important to embrace as best we could modern technology. Hence the reason we've gone for a multimedia offering that's interactive and uses modern technology. And we were helped in that choice by our choice of company. We went out to tender for this particular project and approached a number of companies working in this field. And we finally went with a British company, which is great, ATS Heritage. But what really won it for us from ATS is their focus on content, focus on what's in there. Whilst they delivered a package on modern interactive multimedia technology, they were very much focused on delivering the content within it and the messages and the stories that our visitors need. And that was really important to us. And for us, it's really important that they become a central part of our visitor experience. And as part of that, we're offering it as a free offering for all our visitors. It's included in the entry price, so everybody has the opportunity to pick up one of these. The final bit of the package, if you like, is because we use the modern app-based technology, and we will also have this up on the iTunes Store and Google Play very shortly, so people can download it to their own iPod, iPhone, whatever they choose. So if you don't want to pick up one of our devices or want to take it away with you, people can do that. Or indeed, look offline at home to pick up the detail. It'll be available in those stores for doing that. So exciting prospect for us, something that really enhances our visitor experience, reinforces what we're doing and continues to allow us to tell the really important and exciting story of Bletchley Park.
Bletchley Park, the very name gives me goose pimples. This is hallowed ground.
I feel immensely privileged to have been chosen and to have been trusted to do a job like this.
They say that what went on at Bletchley Park shortened the war by 2 years. And when you think what that would have meant in the cost of lives. I've never come across anywhere like it. I just think the place has got a magic about it.
It helped to win that most important war.
This is a place of history. It's a place that shortened the war. It's a place to which we all owe a remarkable debt.
Hello, and welcome to Bletchley Park.
There is a narrator who goes through the piece, takes you back in time to the Second World War, and she's a great actress who I think will engage very well with the kids.
Ready for the first Bletchley Park Codebreaker Challenge? Good show! Now, first things first. Do you actually know what a code is? Yes? No? Well, let me explain. Suppose you have a message to send to your troops. Say, attack at midnight. But if the enemy gets to read your message...
Ah, so they are attacking at midnight. Then we will attack them first.
Bang, bang. Ah, disaster. So, you make up a code where words mean different things, and only your people know about the code. Clever, eh? Have a go at the Codebreaker Challenge and see how many of the coded messages you can crack.
Hi, I'm Mike Howie. I'm the MD of ATS Heritage, and we're a multimedia company working in the cultural sector. We, for over 10 years, have been producing audio tours for museums and heritage sites. And we had a light bulb moment about 3 or 4 years ago when we were asked by a client in National Trust to do a multimedia tour. And we tried to persuade them out of it because we couldn't understand why they'd want to look at a screen and not look around and listen. They kind of forced us to do it, and we delivered a multimedia tour with a character on screen, and the feedback was fantastic. So we thought, this is really interesting, this is a bit different, and we'd been growing our film team and editors part of the company, and we designed our own cases then to go around the Apple iTouch 4. And then, since then, in the last 3 years, the feedback has been phenomenal. So places like National Portrait Gallery, Chatsworth House, National Trust sites. And the trick that most of them miss is making people pay for them, because if you make people pay for this great content you produce, the take-up will be 5-10%. And the thing that Bletchley have really got right is they're making this inclusive, and everybody's going to get a device, which means everyone gets the same story, everyone gets the same great content, and, as Ian said earlier on, really engages the audience. So this, for us, is the perfect site. The client totally wants us to go for it in terms of multimedia content, allows it to be quirky on the kids' tour, made the content as engaging as possible, and is giving it to everybody, kind of dream ticket. We started working on it in January. We delivered the adult tour by about May, and the family tour about 3 weeks ago. So it's been a bit of a roller coaster. We've got a great relationship with Bletchley, so we are looking at other ways to develop the content. There's so many exciting things happening. I mean, you start talking about Google Glasses and all the other rich multimedia opportunities that there are. You know, I can see in 15 years' time people walking around with Google Glasses and meeting Alan Turing as they step around the site. You know, I mean, they are that interested in making sure that this is not just a one-off development of content, that we continue the process and continue the relationship and continue making a site that was in the forefront of code breaking, of technology in its day, the forefront of visitor experience. Describing that, it's a really interesting story in its own right.
We put the multimedia guides to the test with visitors aged from 6 to 86.
If you haven't watched the instructions yet, now's a good time. Just press instructions on your main tour menu. I'll see you again here by the lake if you press 1 lake on your main tour menu.
So what have you seen so far? Tell me where you started.
So we started at the lake at Bletchley Park, and then we headed round to the front of the mansion, and then we've walked around and now outside the cottages here.
And have you learned more than you could have possibly imagined?
Yeah, it's really interesting actually with the app to see actually how much history is behind it, and you just don't learn from just looking at all of these places, and there's so many stories that you don't see or hear about until you do get something like this to assist you.
And Paulie, you'd maybe want to digest it a bit later if you could get the app at home.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great idea, to be able to download the app and then look at it on your own iPod in your own time. Having seen everywhere, then you can sort of look down at your screen and focus on it a bit better.
Because then you're recognising places you saw. Have you got on, Mike?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it, actually. It's been really good. Informative as well. For me, the fact is that I've lived in Milton Keynes for almost 30 years and I've never actually been here. It's been really interesting.
You don't know what's on your doorstep, do you, until you get something like this and delve into it a bit?
No.
It's very, very good. Very clear and very interesting. There's so much detail has been put in. It's very good.
And do you think the technology is quite friendly?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's good because you get a lot of background, things which perhaps we did know, but also a lot we didn't know.
Well, things that you get told and you forget because it's not dwelt on long enough.
No.
You haven't got time to simulate.
No, as I said, I'm really enjoying it. I just wish I could
see it more clearly.
But I mean, can't do much about that. Joan has the same problem when she's taking a photo on her digital camera. But that's just a problem I don't think we can ever solve.
Thank you.
Yes, right. Very good indeed. And I've enjoyed it much more than when I came last time, because I've been twice and it was better the second time and it's wonderful now.
The availability of the multimedia guides for every visitor, included in the admission price, is a huge step forward for Bletchley Park as a heritage attraction. Joel Greenberg is one of the historians who helped put the content together.
The process that was followed was that the company that produced the multimedia guide followed several guides around on the basis of that, because we all have our own take on it. They produced a composite script, and then there was a panel of people. I was one of them, that we went through it and read the script initially and made comments and suggested changes, the most important thing being to correct any inaccuracies, particularly historical inaccuracies and technical inaccuracies. They then produced a first draft of the guide, We then reviewed it again and made changes, and both the adult and the children's guide, there were quite a number of iterations, both in terms of iterating on the script and iterating on the actual content of the final product until we got it right. We kept on tweaking it, until we felt we had a something which was as good as we could get. End of the day, you have to give it to visitors and get their feedback. In terms of functionality, particularly, the content is probably less of an issue, but the main thing is to get visitors' feedback on the functionality. But I'm pretty confident that the content is reasonably accurate, maybe a matter of opinion about how you word certain things, particularly technical descriptions, but in the main, I'm pretty content.
Have we achieved the impossible, Christian? Have we impressed you?
I wouldn't say I'm that difficult to impress. I kind of arrived thinking, hey, up, let's see what this is going to be about. Because 3 years ago, when geeks got together and said, this is what an app should look like, it kind of hovered and it glowed. And there were so many weird and wonderful things, because you know what geeks are like when they spill their mind. So what I saw today was a very pleasant surprise and really makes me feel that Bletchley Park is on the right track to not just digitise some of the incredible stories that are here, but to introduce people outside of Bletchley Park, outside of Bletchley, outside of England, and effectively the whole world, when the app is released, to the amazing stories that happened here.
And it's told in a very rich way, isn't it? I mean, I'm bound to say that. I want to shout it from the rooftops. I think it's a wonderful product, but it's going to be wonderful when it is an app. But for now, it does take you around the site and take you deeper into it than we could have achieved before.
I think that the app, well, it obviously complements beautifully some of the people that have been here for years, because I know that they had a big part to the script and enabling the stories to kind of come through within the app. So I can see people who are visiting for the first time getting quite a heavy dose of history through the app. For me, I find that I dug deep and I found what I thought was lacking. So do give it time. I was thinking, oh, we need more of the actual veterans that were here. And then when I was shown a little bit deeper in some of the actual sections, there they were. Yeah. And I think that needs to be championed more. I have since found out that there was a lot more interviews with veterans that haven't necessarily been used. And so I'm quite excited to see where the app is going to evolve, because this is, of course, the beginning, and there's been a lot of very constructive feedback today. I think that anybody that comes along and uses the app as it is going to be quite pleasantly surprised and very informed. I'm just as excited about what it's going to become as well.
High praise indeed. Thank you very much for putting it to the test. It's passed the bar.
Yeah, I'd say with something as big as the Bletchley Park story, trying to fit it in an app is quite an incredible task.
How to break it up is quite a tall order.
Splitting the app into two sections is good as well, having the children's section and Bletchley Park adult.
So how do you feel today's gone?
Very good day. Managed to get the sort of the official launch done. A lot of people had experience of the multimedia guides. Everybody's gone away very impressed with what we've got.
It's nice to get some helpful feedback as well, isn't it?
It's very helpful to get feedback. I think generally people have been very impressed by the guides. They provide a good interactive immersive experience and a chance to look at the stories from a number of different angles, both in terms of interactive maps, and audio clips and video clips.
I think the key thing that we're trying to get across is that it's a huge step up in what there is once you're on the site to experience, absorb and enjoy, because our storytelling is a little interrupted by the huge development we've got going on. And we all know that there's so much to see once we're done. And there's more to see all the time. We're bringing new exhibitions online and new things to look at and touch and read about. But this is a big step, isn't it?
It's a huge step, and it allows us, as I said, to provide this multimedia, videos, audio, interactives experience for our visitors. It allows them to get the story in all different dimensions, which is hugely important. And as you say, whilst we're busy doing lots of renovation and restoration on the site, it's a consistent offering that takes us through to Easter next year when we start to open the new facilities, and then it'll be complementary to that. We'll continue to refine it at that point to add reflections of the new buildings and the visitor centre and what have you, continue to refine it to make it even better.
So of course this place has always been at the cutting edge of innovation and technology. It's nice to be back there again, isn't it?
Yes, of course it's very important that we continue to use modern technology, with the Bletchley Park being the birthplace of modern computer. It's very appropriate that we continue to use modern technology, be on the cutting edge for things. Who knows where we'll be in 5 years' time. Perhaps we'll have Google Glasses with your multimedia guide on it, but it's very important that we continue to move forward with the times.
The Budd twins and their younger brother had a unique childhood as they lived at Bletchley Park during the Second World War. Their father was the head of works services, and they were one of just two families to live in one of the cottages. All three came back to Bletchley during a visit all the way from Australia by one of the twin girls, Faye Barnwell. She joined her sister Jean Cheshire and their little brother Neville Anderson Budd. I was lucky enough to listen in on their reminiscences.
Very lucky to be joined today by some people who've got an absolutely unique experience of life at Bletchley Park during World War II. Can you introduce yourselves for me?
Neville John Budd, youngest.
Faye Bamwell. Jean Cheshire, Nee Budd.
Now, the two of you are twins, obviously.
Terrible twins.
So these were your big sisters?
Yes, look at my big sisters.
I should point out for audio purposes, they're a good foot or so shorter than Neville. It's by the by. It's fascinating for us to meet you, first of all, but I can't imagine how you feel when you look at it now.
Very nostalgic.
Yes.
Very, very pleased to see it and pleased to see what's happening to it, and it's still being preserved, especially the number two cottage, you know, and to look at it now brings back so many memories.
What was it like as a place to live? It must have been very strange.
Yes, it was strange, being that we were the only family on site at that time. We used to go to school together, play together, and probably cause a little bit of mischief if we could. Not very often, though.
Neville, anything to say?
Yes, I do. No, as Jean says, you know, we weren't allowed to have people visit or children visit to play with. This is our garden, in a sense. And beautiful, and as I say, the house was big. Well, to us it was big. I've seen it just recently and it seems so much smaller. Maybe it's because I'm taller. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we had a great time there. It was a happy home.
It was, definitely. What do you remember about moving here?
Me, nothing, because I was two.
Well, we were 6 years old, weren't we, Jane? Yes. But I can't really remember moving in. No. The only time I remember moving in was when Neville was born in 1938, and Faye and I came and stayed with Aunt Etty and Uncle Harry, who were living here at that time, and she looked after us. They were our godparents, so that was quite nice.
Well, Mum was busy having you, Neville.
Yeah, down in Portsmouth.
So perhaps you remember more when you left, towards the end of the war?
Yes. Dad was still working for the Foreign Office, as it was called, and Faye and I had to do the majority of the packing up because Mum was not feeling too well at that point. Mm. But
and Dad was just throwing everything out. It was, you know, your little treasures, perhaps, that we had, you know.
I think probably Dad was indoctrinated with being destroy everything on the park. Mm-hmm. And I think he had this in his mind that we had got to get rid of it and start our new life in the outside world.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you remember about how the secrecy of what was going on here and what you saw day to day was in
nothing?
Ingrained
it was like a general life with a family. You know, we were told to be quiet at certain times, and we weren't allowed to go down into the park because people were working there on secretive work. And it was just that a normal life, the family. It was,
I think,
you know.
Yeah, I think that's what most people did in those days. You know, you try to live day by day as happy as you could. And Mum and Dad were happy people, although they had this sort of work to do. But when we were at home in this house here, it was home, wasn't it, Jean? Yes. It was great.
Yeah. It was during the war. I mean, at that time, you know, people lost families. Mm. Couldn't get home because they lived in Scotland or Wales or somewhere. And the door at that time was open, Christmas hogmanay, because people could not get home and it was come in, make yourself at home. Mm. And they were looked after, basically by Mum and Dad, and we were the kids that were here. So it wasn't the youngsters like nowadays that have all-night parties. This used to go on for a weekend or so, you know, people... just drifting in, depending on what duty they were doing.
Well, this place didn't sleep, did it?
No. They had important work to do and they'd done it very well.
24 hours. Yeah. They were working.
You must have got used to sort of lots of comings and goings. And...
well, we know all this now, but we didn't know it then. So, therefore, people just went to work.
That's all they did.
Yeah.
Like a normal day. I mean, you know, as Gina tells people here, that Turin and Dilly Knox were next door.
We didn't know. We don't know.
You know, they may have walked across here. We may have seen them. We don't know. Mm. They were just people going to work.
Mm.
But it could have been Dilly Knox or Alan Turing or any
or
of those Welshman, people.
Yeah,
or any of them.
Mm. Well, we used to go at the back gate to school. You know, we thought everybody lived like this. We really did. You know, we didn't realise that we were living any different to anybody else, really.
So show me something that's got a strong memory for you then.
Well, for me, it was a great place. But, you know, the sad thing was, as Jean Fay say, we weren't allowed to have friends in at all. And so we had to make our own entertainment, you know. And Christmas time was just the family, but also people from the park. I don't know. I suppose in a way it was an unusual life we led. These were my playmates.
They were
terrible to me.
Of course they were. You're their little brother. That's the law, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the law. Yeah, I couldn't climb trees.
Then I remember also the pigeons coming out of the loft. Yes, and
I loved to see them. They used to fly all around here. Yes. It was great, you know, and even to go up and see the man who looked after the pigeons, he used to say, come on up and have a look. We've got new baby ones. It was lovely. Yeah,
it sounds like everybody made you feel welcome, as it were, because you were in this hive of activity, but it was your home. It's a strange thing.
They didn't see us. We were in enigma, as you might say. We used to go out the back gate here, up to the back gate, you know, out to school, be very quiet, you know, don't make a noise. And I think that's why we were so quiet after the war, really. We've only just sort of more or less
blossomed,
that's right, Jean, exactly the same. Yeah,
well,
blossomed.
What I've heard today of you two, yes, you did.
Do you remember them being a bit quieter than this, then?
No, they were, but, you know, as you grow up, you get older, you know. The Enigma people, the code breakers. After that was the teachers, and then there was the GPO, and we were here all those years. So, I mean, we left in 49, 50, 50, I think it was. So, you know, you got all these different people, but you made those friends or you met those people. But then now you just remember, I mean, Faye says something, Jean will remember a part of it and put a bit more in.
Yes, that's right.
You know, there's things that I do remember, you know, in that time.
Yeah.
And think, you know,
as a child, I think whatever your situation in childhood, you think it's normal.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah. To
and
us, it was
an adult,
normal.
You start to realise, this was a bit different.
It was good.
Let's have a look at your cottage then.
There was a bungalow or something up there, wasn't there?
Yes,
is that where that Davis people that lived?
Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Jean knows more about that than what I do, really.
How about the gate? Has it always been there?
Yeah.
Yes, I brought a lady in, Diane Saunders, as she was then. She used to live in number one cottage after the war. And I brought her around here, and she reckoned that there was a hut there for possibly a guard. So there must have been something there during that period of time. But we didn't take too much notice of things, you know.
Well, the site was a lot bigger then, wasn't it? There's a lot of it stone.
Yes. And look at that lovely gate there, but I can't remember that ever being used.
That was never opened, as far as I know. I didn't know it opened, did you, Faye?
Well, you see, we were told to go straight to school, you know, and straight home. You didn't take much notice of anything because all these beautiful buildings around you, they were just there.
And you couldn't have guessed that in 70 years people would be asking you about gates and layout and things like that.
No, that's true.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Being at the Enigma reunion is a privilege. It's a rare opportunity to hear firsthand memories of the veterans themselves in the very buildings where they made a huge difference to the war effort. As the restoration of Bletchley Park progresses, more of those buildings will become accessible to visitors. The first of those new exhibitions to open will be Hut 11, which tells the story of the women who worked on the bomb machines. Some of them were given a sneak peek at the new exhibition during the reunion.
Flocol, C-O-L-E.
And where were you stationed?
Chicksands Priory in Bedfordshire.
And what was your actual role there?
Well, I was trying very hard to crack the enigma, like we all were. I've just said now, the air stations with Canada, America, Greece, all over the world. Mm. Wasn't just where I was.
Is it nice to be one of the first people to see and hear?
Yeah. My only regret is that we should have kept this
as it was after the war, instead of letting it go to seed, it just literally went down to nothing. It looked awful. I came here in 1999 and it was appalling. You know, everything was boarded up. Oh, and now I'm seeing such a difference. But why on earth wasn't it kept? I mean, when you think, this shortened the war by at least 2 years. I often think how I kept everything I'd got for 70 years.
So how long did you keep the secret for?
70 years. I don't know how I did it. Mainly because I never thought of talking about it. But recently I've given a talk at our little heritage centre. I'm 91 next month.
We won't tell anyone.
Mark, who makes our podcast.
Hello.
This lady's
Hello.
Come all the way from America and thinks it's great. So,
oh, really?
Because I used to work here in this hut.
You were saying you couldn't believe how low the ceiling was.
No, I can't believe how low. And now I'm claustrophobic. It didn't bother me when I was 17.
What do you make of the warrant officer?
I love it. It's just like, I'm so bossy. We were just plain old wrens, you know, 17 and a half.
Do as you're told, yeah.
Oh, she was a, you know, kind of a bossy old thing. Not old, but to us she was old.
She's probably about 22,
yeah.
Is she?
Yeah. All right. But anyway, this is wonderful.
You need to get a look at the wren as well. She's fantastic. She'll take you down memory lane.
Who will? Well, she's the bossy one, Aaron.
She who must be obeyed.
Absolutely. We're scared to death of her.
Girls, get those rotten settings, it kills us. The bugs can be frustrating.
I gather the training was quite rigorous.
It was. Oh, it was terrible. Talk about scrubbing stone. You know, it was a castle, and we had to scrub these stone steps. And we'd had all the inoculations and vaccinations and whatnot. Our legs were numb, you know, and our arms were all numb from them. And they still made us scrub. And then they had a petty officer or somebody on those Nissan huts who used to come with his stick or something and say, wakey, wakey, rise and shine in the morning.
I bet you wonder what you let yourself in for.
Absolutely. But you know, all the men were volunteers.
Yeah.
And if we couldn't take it or they chucked you out, you'd be put in a factory or wherever they wanted you. But these, the Wrens were volunteers.
Yeah.
So I decided I was going to stick it out. I didn't want anyone to think I couldn't take it.
You proved your worth.
I
and
did.
And were sent here. And then you went on to Eastcote.
Yeah.
And then I went to Eastcote.
This must have been a sort of almost a microcosm of this room with four bombs
Absolutely,
in it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Huge at Eastcote.
Huge. And the dormitories we stayed in had about 70 people, you know, on bunks, three bunks high. But here, I stayed at Woburn Abbey and Crawley Grange. Not too many people I've talked to were bussed out to those billets. I was very lucky.
There's a lady here who went to Woburn.
Oh, yeah?
Where is she? She's in yellow. Jean. Well, if I can introduce you, you can share memories
yes.
of the...
But that was not
I remember
bad.
Them telling me it was so cold, they put tea from the tea urn into their hot water bottles.
Exactly.
Drafty old Abbey that, you know, yes.
We were very lucky to be there when I hear horror stories of these other people.
Mm.
But when we were in Eastcote, we were able to zip up and down to London on our time off. I don't remember going anywhere when I was here. At Bletchley. Of course, no cars. Well, she went to London.
I'm so glad you got to see it. It's
yeah,
been wonderful
me too.
To meet you.
Thank you so much.
Well, I was at Tullyhewin Castle in 43, and from there I came to Barkston Gardens in London, holding house where we stayed for a week while they were getting the builders out of Eastcote. We were waiting for Eastcote to open, and the five of us there went there, cleaned up the builders' muck. We were given spanners and told to put our own bunks up. So I was trained there, and then I came to live in Steeplechase, working at Adstock, and from Adstock I came here.
Oh.
And from here I went back to Adstock.
I did it the other way around. I came from Tullyhewin here, and they trained me here. And then I went to Eastcote.
That's very odd. Well, there you go.
It kept changing, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And I went to Colombo in the spring of 44.
Yeah.
So I was breaking Japanese there.
I didn't go overseas.
Until more recently.
Yes. After the war, I went to Royal Arthur, and Prince Philip was courting Elizabeth while I was there. He was rushing up and down to London.
When I met the Queen here last year, was it?
Year before.
I was demonstrating the bomb to her. And I shouldn't have done it. I knew I shouldn't have done it at the time, but I couldn't stop it. And she was very friendly, and I said, "Ma'am, could I please meet Prince Philip?" She said, "Of course you could, my dear, come on." So she dragged me over. She says, Philip. She was in the Navy too, you know.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But she did say to me, "Tell me, how did you manage to keep this secret?" Well, I was a bit wrong-footed because I was trying to demonstrate the bomb, so I quickly changed my mind and I said, "Ma'am, in those days there was a word which appears to have disappeared from the English language." "What word is that?" I said, "Discipline."
Yes, that's
when we
true.
Were young, if we were told to do or not do something by somebody in authority, and you know what she said? "I so agree."
She's absolutely right.
It is. It's a breakdown of discipline.
Well, my parents never knew what I did.
They never knew.
Never knew.
No, my parents
mine
never
died
knew.
No. I could tell them, you know, that 30
years. But mind you, give them their due. They never asked.
Oh, no.
When I went home on my first leave, my mother said, "What are you going to be doing?" I said, "Mum, I can't tell you." They never, ever inquired again. My husband never asked me what I was doing.
Mine didn't know until after this 30 year.
And when Group Captain Winterbottom wrote the book, and it was...
That was a shock.
Do you know, I was horrified. The people I was still knew said, "How could he do that?"
And
we thought he'd be taken to task over it, but he wasn't. So we think that because technology had passed us, it wasn't that important to keep it secret.
We couldn't believe it. This friend of mine, Wren, who lives here, that I worked with, called me up to tell me about the book.
Did you travel by a car driven by Mira Winterbottom? His niece was an MT driver here.
No, we used to go in a bus.
No, we went in an estate car.
Oh, good for you. We went in some kind of a bus.
10 of us came here in the estate car from Steeplechase.
Oh, really? No, we didn't have anything like that.
Mira Winterbottom.
Oh.
Actually, she said, it's quite funny because I drove up to the gate one day and the man on the gate knew my name. And he said, "Your name's Winterbottom." He knew that because I was sitting in the snow at the time.
Oh, that's funny.
Thanks to the staff, volunteers and veterans of Bletchley Park who took part in this podcast. For more information, go to bletchleypark.org.uk or find us on iTunes. Also, follow us on Twitter, where we are at @bparkpodcast, and join our Facebook group. Thanks to Audioboo, who make this podcast possible. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.